WML News at 7. Good morning. I'm Maria Leaf, and it's a gorgeous start to the Saturday morning. But if you have errands to run or outdoor plans later on, be ready for some rain this afternoon. Thunderstorms with hail are likely. The WML ABC 7 Storm Watch forecast is coming up. President Biden wrapping up his Middle East trip today with what the White House is calling a major strategy announcement.
Today, the president meets with several Persian Gulf leaders in Saudi Arabia for the Gulf Cooperation Council Summit. He's expected to lay out his strategy for the Middle East and for countering Iran's nuclear ambitions. That comes as the White House has released satellite imagery said to show a Russian transport at an airfield in Iran. The administration believes the Iranians were showcasing weapons-capable drones to the Russians, and those drones might be used in the ongoing invasion of Ukraine. Jill Nato, Fox News.
If you're having suicidal thoughts or struggling with mental illness and just need someone to talk to, there's a new number to call starting today.
The 10-digit National Suicide Prevention Hotline is being replaced by a 3-digit number, 988.
So that folks have easier access to crisis and mental health and suicide prevention services.
Tim Jansen is the CEO of Community Crisis Services in Hyattsville, which answers calls. He says more people have been calling since the pandemic started.
The federal and some local governments have put a lot more resources into it, so there are far more people to answer the phone.
Heather Curtis on WMAL and WMAL.com.
Authorities in New York City announcing a cause of death for Ivana Trump.
President Trump's first wife died on Thursday after a fall that resulted in, quote, blunt impact injuries off her torso. The NYPD said Thursday she was found unconscious in close proximity to the bottom of a staircase in her apartment. Ivana Trump was just 73 years old.
Fox's Kevin Cork, a law enforcement source, says that someone called police to ask for a wellness check on Trump because she had not been seen in a while. Projects around the house can pile up, but one hardware chain is putting a deadline on it.
If you've been putting off household projects until someday, you should know that someday is here. Ace Hardware has deemed today, July 16th, as someday. It's a way to get customers motivated to work on their long overdue paint projects. The company even cites its own poll that says 40% of those surveyed said they have no time to paint, and 37% say they don't want to deal with the prep and cleanup. So the DIY holiday you've been waiting for is here. Tanya J. Powers, Fox News.
WML Sports, the Nats hoping to rally against the Braves this afternoon after yesterday's 8-4 loss. First pitch at Nats Park scheduled for 4:05, weather permitting. The O's 10-game winning streak is over. They lost to the Rays yesterday 5-4. The two will face off again in Tampa today just after 4 o'clock. WML Traffic and Weather next. WMAL Traffic and Weather, Michelle Murray in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In Virginia and Lorton, Route 1 is still closed in both directions at Lorton Road due to crash activity. Follow police direction there. And still accident activity right now in Fairfax on eastbound 236 at Ollie Lane. Multiple lanes are blocked. Also in Maryland on 95 southbound near Route 32, left lane still blocked with that crash, and you will find brief delays approaching the scene. And also look out for some slowing traffic on 95 southbound through Woodbridge headed towards the Prince William Parkway. Westbound on 66 at Business 234 looks like they are picking up that work zone. However, you will find a little bit of slowing traffic through the area. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WML Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Partly sunny to at times, mostly cloudy on this Saturday. Scattered showers and thunderstorms developing midday and into the afternoon. They will continue through the evening. Highs today in the mid-80s. Later on tonight, storms end. Lows back in the 60s to low 70s. More of the same on your Sunday. Partly sunny, scattered showers afternoon. Storms, I think, will be likely. High temperatures tomorrow in the upper 80s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
74 right now at Reagan National. I'm Maria Leaf on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Now, on News Talk 105.9 WMAL,
the Saturday Morning Update.
Hour 2 of the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler. John Gizzi joins us each week. He is the White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. John, good morning.
Good morning, Rick.
Wanted to ask you about President Biden's trip to Saudi Arabia and the Mideast. The Washington Post summed it up Friday afternoon by saying, "The president's 3 hours at the royal palace in Jeddah were seen as a diplomatic win for the crown prince, who has tried to rehabilitate his image. Biden seemed to approach it as a necessary, if somewhat distasteful, step to improve relations with the world's top oil exporter at a time of rising gas prices and concern about Iran's nuclear ambitions. Your thoughts, John, on the president in the Mideast?
The president did almost certainly have to sit down with Mohammed bin Saud, the crown prince and strongman in Saudi Arabia. Given the energy crisis within the United States, the high cost of gasoline, and not to mention Iran rattling its nuclear saber, once again, one does have to reach out to people who an American president would otherwise find distasteful. In other words, we don't pick the leaders our leaders have to talk to and break bread with. That said, some say that President Biden went over the top in his meeting with someone he called a thug and a killer for his alleged involvement in the killing of Mr. Khashoggi, a journalist and Washington Post columnist who was brutally slain at the Saudi embassy in Turkey as he went to get his marriage license. Needless to say, his former fiance denounced the president's move and said it was uncalled for. Fred Ryan, the CEO of the Washington Post, also blasted the president, giving a fist bump to MBS. The president himself said that on human rights, his record is solid and unchanged, and he did bring up the death of Mr. Khashoggi. He said that the crown prince said he had nothing to do with it. He told him he felt otherwise, and that was the end of the discussion. It may be said that this was a meeting that had to happen under the global situation as it is and the economic situation as it is in the United States. On the other hand, some may say with the fist bump, the warm greetings, he went a little bit too far.
Let's turn to domestic politics. Capitol Hill, Joe Manchin didn't make any further friends in the Democratic Party by basically saying no to Build Back Better. What's his reasoning and what's next?
His reasoning was about an issue that most Democrats, in fact, I would say over 90% of the Democrats in Congress, think is sacrosanct, climate change. In an effort to get the global temperature down, specifically down to and below 2.7% Fahrenheit, there are numerous costly measures in the Build Back Better bill that contain climate change measures. The West Virginia senator said no, he would not support that at all, and he would not vote for a budget reconciliation bill that includes any of the measures designed to reduce climate change. Now, since this has happened, he's been demonized in the last 48 hours as an enemy of climate change. Many fellow Democrats denounce him. He is merely talking about cost and, of course, the effect of punitive legislation on American business at a time of economic uncertainty. He will probably be continued to be condemned by the environmental wing of his party, which is large. He'll be seen as a spoiler. Back home in West Virginia, he's pretty popular.
The intense debate over the Supreme Court, the attacks from the Democrats. Democrats have called for expanding the number of justices on the court. The Republicans attempted a preemptive strike this week, but they struck out.
To say the least. Led by Congressman Dusty Johnson, Republican of South Dakota, and Kelly Armstrong, Republican of North Dakota, lawmakers on the Republican side of the aisle sought a resolution calling for the Supreme Court's membership to remain what it has since 1869. In other words, nine justices. The nickname of the measure in Congress was Keep It Nine. Well, Democrats apparently don't want to keep it at nine. They defeated it with 218 House members on the Democratic side voting negative. In fact, Hank Johnson of Georgia already has a measure that would increase the size of the court. Pack it, as critics say. 57 Democrats have signed on the measure. Simply put, Supreme Court last went over 9 members at the beginning of the Civil War. The Lincoln administration increased it to 10, primarily because they felt that justices such as Chief Justice Roger Taney would rule against the Lincoln administration as it sought to prosecute the renegade states. Lincoln put a political crony from Illinois on the court then. In 1869, when Republicans were still in charge of the executive and the legislature, they knew a political move that did not exactly go over well with the public, and they brought the numbers back to 9. FDR tried to enlarge the court in 1937. Members of Congress of both parties shot it down. Now the call for expanding the court begins because Democrats pointed out that recent decisions of the court go against where they feel the majority of the American public is, specifically on abortion and public prayer. One member, Susan Wild of Pennsylvania, actually likened the recent court's rulings to something that the Taliban would do in Afghanistan. Clearly, this is an issue of keeping it 9 or adding a few more that's going to dog the court for a while to come.
Article you wrote at Newsmax this week, John, the headline on it, Michigan County Chairman, Trump's endorsement won't mean much in Michigan's primary now. Is that indicative of what may be going on around the country?
No, this is a very specific circumstance. Michiganders like to vote early. 2 years ago, 70% of the Water Wonderland electorate voting in their primary did so by mailing in their ballot. Right now, it's estimated that that number will go over 70% before the primary August 2nd. So Donald Trump's endorsement of anyone would not really have an impact because most people have voted already. It's that simple. I might add that the person he twice has said nice things about, albeit not making an endorsement, TV commentator Tudor Dixon, leads in most of the polls and is very likely to be the nominee. If so, she'll do so with Trump's blessing, but not his endorsement.
The death of Ivana Trump this week, Donald Trump's first wife, and for people that didn't follow the Trumps that far back, the New York social scene, tell us the impact of Ivana Trump on Donald Trump and New York.
Ivana Trump, the daughter of Czech immigrants, was a fixture in Manhattan society on the dinner party circuit in Midtown Manhattan and internationally. She came to the U.S., was a professional model, and married a young entrepreneur named Donald Trump. They had 3 children, of course, Donald Jr., Eric, and Ivanka. Donald Trump himself later credited her parents for being the positive and most significant influence on his own children. It was said that the parents of his wife really raised their children, and Donald Trump himself said that's why they turned out well. Long after he and Ivana were divorced, he attended his father-in-law's funeral in the former Czechoslovakia. It should be pointed out also that she was a character in her own right. When Donald Trump attempted to have a mistress when they were skiing in Aspen, it was Ivanka, a championship skier herself, who went out on the slopes and reminded people that Donald was an errant husband. She was known in restaurants to be generous to waiters and waitresses, but also to complain when she wasn't served properly, and doing so in her trademark accent. When she was asked about Donald Trump's second wife, Marla Maples, she once joked, "You mean Moolah Maples." Ivana Trump, an American original adopted from the Czech Republic.
John Gizzi, the White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com and Newsmax TV. As always, John, thank you very much.
Always a pleasure. Take care, Rick.
It is 7:21, Saturday morning update on WMAL. What's going on with the Democrats and the Hispanic vote? Well, we'll find out next. Stay with us. But right now, we head to the WMAL Traffic Center, and Michelle Murray is there.
In Maryland, the accident on 95 southbound near Route 32 in Elk Ridge cleared, all lanes open, and just watch for brief delays there. A couple of accidents still to watch out for in Virginia. Southbound on Route 1 near Lorton Road, an incident has all southbound lanes closed right near Lorton Road. Northbound lanes are open. Follow police direction there. And in Fairfax, 236 eastbound at Ollie Lane, watch out for multiple lane closures through that accident scene. In the Leesburg area, you will still find crash activity affecting the southbound lanes of Business 15 between the Leesburg bypass and Route 7. All lanes remain blocked. Follow police direction there. Now from GarageDriveHere.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Partly sunny to at times, mostly cloudy on this Saturday. Scattered showers and thunderstorms developing midday and into the afternoon. They will continue through the evening. Highs today in the mid-80s. Later on tonight, storms end. Lows back in the 60s to low 70s. More of the same on your Sunday. Partly sunny, scattered showers, afternoon storms, I think, will be likely. High temperatures tomorrow in the upper 80s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
74 degrees. It's 7:21 on the Saturday morning update.
News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
Making sense of the news.
It is a Saturday morning update. I'm Rick Fowler. Thank you for being with us. And, of course, the primaries. Very interesting race in Maryland, a very interesting congressional district, and a very interesting candidate. And we're joined by Dr. Mariella Rocha. She is a candidate running for Congress for Maryland's 6th District. Dr. Rocha, it's great to have you with us.
Yes, likewise. Thank you so much for having me, Rick.
Well, first, tell us a little bit about Maryland's 6th Congressional District, because for people that don't follow it too closely, I think they would be amazed to see how far west that district goes.
Yes, yes. It's a very big district. We've got over 3,000 square miles, and we recently went through redistricting. We got new maps, and our 6th Congressional District starts out in Montgomery County, Gaithersburg, and up, and takes all of Frederick, Washington, Allegheny, and Garrett County, basically almost in Pittsburgh. So it's a very big district.
So you're going all the way to the western tip of the state of Maryland from Gaithersburg. So that's quite a geographic expanse, and it's also quite an expanse when it comes to the voters. You've got the suburban and really urban mentality here in Montgomery County and around Frederick, and then you've got the agriculture, the rural voters, all the way out almost to the Pennsylvania line. How do you address the issues when you've got that variety of, you know, what's important to these different people?
I think one of the biggest things this year is a lot of the issues that we're seeing here in the district are some of the same national issues that are affecting Americans across this country. The biggest one being the economy and inflation, which, you know, really affects pretty much everything, you know, gas prices, when we go to the grocery store, everything is just going up. So that's really been one of the biggest issues that the voters are talking about. Number two, it's been the border and the situation that's going on between the southern border. And even though the western part of the district and Montgomery County area geographically are completely different, the voters are really feeling the same issues, which is, like I mentioned, economy, inflation, and the border.
And you really see the border as that critical an issue here, because if you were to listen to basically the Democrats, you wouldn't think that was a big deal because they're certainly not paying any attention to it.
Yeah, no, and the thing about it is, you know, we talk about and we hear about this all the time that Maryland is basically becoming a sanctuary state, and we've got some counties, especially more on the Montgomery County side, where they're basically sanctuary counties where, you know, immigration laws are not being enforced. And the message is the same across the district. You know, us as Republicans, conservatives, we are all for immigration, but we want it done the right way, because at the end of the day, the communities that are hit the most are, number one, the lower incomes and Hispanic communities. So although we're not a border state, this affects us all.
You were born in Puerto Rico, so you are of Hispanic origin. we've seen the Democrats really trying to downplay and dismiss what appears to be a real movement in the Hispanic communities around the country to move to the Republican Party. And we saw Myra Flores recently elected in South Texas, and again, the Democrats dismissed her. Tell us a little bit about what Democrats and a lot of people in the media don't understand about the Hispanic communities.
I'm glad you're asking that question, because the biggest thing that us as Hispanics and Latinos in the community that feel like they don't understand is we've always been conservative at heart. We've always held those true conservative values of family first and hard work and love of our families and God. And I think it's one of those things where the Democrat Party has done a lot of trying to pigeonhole people to saying, you know, you're Hispanic, you're a minority, you're a Democrat. And they're making it very easy this year with the things that they're doing, the policies, for people to say, no, wait a minute, we don't align with that. And people are coming to the realization that, wait a minute, I've been a conservative all along.
You served in Afghanistan in the Global War on Terror, and you received a number of medals, including the National Defense Service Medal. We see a lot of former members of the military are running for Congress and have very successful runs and are very successful in their roles on Capitol Hill. Tell us a little bit about what that training that you receive through the military, how that is kind of a contrast with so many of the Harvard-educated senators that we see that have been up there for about 40 years.
We definitely need more veterans in these elected positions, and especially in Congress. You know, a lot the things that the Air Force taught me, starting in basic training and then just through my career, was number one, integrity. Always do the right thing when nobody's looking. And two, you know, hard work, love for this country. I raised my right hand and swore to defend the Constitution against all enemies, and I was willing to die for my country. And I think when you get to that point and you do something that's much bigger than yourself is when you start learning, you know, wait a minute, I love my country and what's going on in today. I can't stand back and just not do anything. And I think my service, you know, I've been serving in my entire adult life, whether it was in the military or as a federal employee here at Fort Detrick. And then to me, this is just a continuation of the love that I have for this country and wanting to make things better.
Well, you have a very interesting background. And for people that would like to learn more about you, what is the website?
Yes, my website is rocaforcongress.com, and that's spelled R-O-C-A for F-O-R congress.com. And there you can learn more about me, support us by volunteering, making a contribution if you can. But we would absolutely love any kind of support, and hopefully we can earn your vote this upcoming July 19th on the primary election.
Dr. Mariela Rocha, running in Maryland's 6th Congressional District. Thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you so much. I hope you have a great day.
We will, and thank you for your service. It's 7:28. It is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer and K.T. McFarland coming up after the 7:30 news with Maria Leaf.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9.
WMAL. News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning. I'm Maria Leaf. And happening now, President Biden meeting with heads of state of multiple Gulf nations at a gathering of the Gulf Corporation Council in Saudi Arabia.
There is a great deal of merit in us working in the country together. Valuable.
Buchanan County, Virginia, struggling to recover after floods tore through the area this week, washing out roads, ripping homes from foundations. This woman was in the process of cleaning up when she described how things got terrifying.
Within an hour or so, the water started coming in the house. It was coming up through the vents. The bathroom was flooded. we all moved to the highest ground we could get to, which is here at the Pilgrims Now Post Office.
No one was reported killed, but about 400 homes and other buildings sustained damage. WMAL Sport, the O's 10-game winning streak has been broken by the Rays. They lost yesterday 5-4. The two will face off in Tampa again today just after 4 o'clock. And weather permitting, the Nats and Braves will face off at 4:05 at Nats Park following yesterday's 8-4 loss. WMAL Traffic and Weather next. WMAL Traffic and Weather. Here's Michelle Murray in the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
In Virginia, you will still find accident activity on Route 1 southbound near Lorton Road. All southbound lanes are closed, but the northbound lanes remain open. In Loudoun County, on 15, Business 15 southbound between the Leesburg Bypass and Route 7, all lanes remain blocked with the crash activity. Follow police direction there. But in Fairfax, the earlier accident on eastbound 236 at Ollie Lane now cleared, and the accident in Maryland on 95 southbound at Route 32 cleared as well, and delays of ease. Now from GarageRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Enjoy the sun while it lasts today. Showers and thunderstorms likely this afternoon. Highs in the mid-80s. Cloudy tonight. Lows in the 70s. It's 72 right now in Bethesda. 74 at Reagan National. I'm Maria Leaf on News Talk 105.9 WMAL.
It is the Saturday morning update. 7:36. I'm Rick Fowler. Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer joins us. He is the president of the London Center for Policy Research, the co-host of the Thought to Action podcast, and the author of Operation Dark Heart. Tony, good morning.
Hey, Rick. Always great to join you.
The president has been in the Mideast. He is in his fourth day of meetings this morning. And, of course, yesterday, Saudi Arabia, the scene. From what you've seen and heard so far, have there been any accomplishments on the national security front, positive or negative?
Let's start with the positive, which is always good, I guess, to set the frame. The thing that he's been talking about, which I think is the most relevant to moving policy forward in a positive way, is the continuation of the Abraham Accords, the idea to have this condominium, as my old boss, Dr. Lennon, used to call it, the condominium of these nations working together in a collective way to enhance their security by economic relationships, economic trade, and of course, collective security. That's one of the things that we promoted and continue to promote as a really good policy. Beyond that, it's been a train wreck. The constant demonstration of the president's dementia is undeniable. The constant word salad that comes out, the inability for him to focus when he's asked questions off the cuff, the issues regarding the Saudi Arabians. Even the Saudis recognize that he's over there to beg for oil, and many, to include the Saudis, have pointed out that the reason that there's an issue with oil here in the United States is because he and his administration chose to create the conditions for lack because of their quote-unquote green policy and their constant work to try to remove domestic production sources. So he's over there right now trying to essentially beg them to provide more resources. And Rick, one of the most embarrassing things is the Khashoggi issue, the assassination of Khashoggi. So when you have a Joe Biden, who was part of the Obama administration, who literally executed U.S. citizens, it's hard to be in a position of lecturing the Saudis when he and Barack Obama had something called the disposition matrix that John Brennan oversaw and assassinated using drones any number of people, to include Anwar al-Awlaki, as a U.S. citizen while he was in Yemen. So it's really embarrassing to see a man who has no credibility, who has a lack of ability to communicate clearly, and is attempting to do some things which basically embarrass the United States. He has become, as we've talked about before, the single point of failure in national security. That failure was on full display, unfortunately, during his trip, and it will continue.
Let's turn to Ukraine. Russians stepping up attacks across the nation for the key regions. That said, there is a headline in Newsweek, Russians in panic mode over strikes by U.S. supplied HIMARS. So tell us a little bit about these high mobility artillery rocket systems and what impact that may have in the war.
So I think it's a little bit of clickbait the way they phrase the title, and I get that. But HIMARS is an effective missile system. It's a multiple rocket system which actually does a great job of taking out area targets. And with the new technology, you have some level of increased precision as well. In the old days, rockets would just kind of be fired, and they'd just kind of meander over, and they would hit an area based on essentially luck, if they hit anything at all. HIMARS is a much more effective system, which uses essentially enhanced targeting. So these things, once they're fired, can actually find targets and hit them much more effectively. The Russian air and anti-artillery systems have been largely ineffective in stopping them. So this is indeed something that is being used to great effect by the Ukrainians, but by the Ukrainians' own count, there is not enough to make a difference. And even with those which the United States may be delivering, I think the United States may be delivering four or five more in the near future, it's just not going to be sufficient to stop the overall onslaught and grinding that the Russians are doing to the Ukrainian people. So, so while it's you know, interesting that these weapon systems are being used to great effect, the ultimate outcome I don't believe is in dispute, in that the Russians will continue to grind down and eventually win Donbass and the entire region within the next 18 months.
18 months you're projecting this could drag on.
I think we're going to be talking this time next year, partition of Ukraine, that we're going to see essentially the Black Sea region and Donbass completely under the control of the Russians, and some level of negotiation trying to figure out where the rest of Ukraine is going to go in, within a partitioned peace.
And real quick, would you say that Russia has the means to continue with all of the sanctions that are in place? Are they having any real impact?
No. As a matter of fact, if anybody goes looks at the economic output and strength of the ruble has gone sky high. I have a hard time looking at the sanctions and trying to figure out if someone on our side basically put up a good show saying, oh, yeah, we'll throw a bunch of sanctions up there and don't worry about it, Vlad. It's going to be okay, because it's actually had essentially the opposite effect in many instances. Putin's domestic approval is super high. The ruble is super high. They found trade partners, which, Rick, we talked about this. He would find ways around everything we were doing. And sure enough, it seems like they were anticipating each sanction as it was coming with some level of short-term, you know, pain, but long-term they've been able to kind of skirt them all. So at this point, there's no downside for Putin to continue the war effort. Plus, there's no serious negotiation going on to end the conflict, which tells me that for domestic policy, Biden and company are just fine having this war go on, to continue to use Putin as a convenient punching bag to blame him for their domestic failures.
There have been growing concerns that Russia and China are leading the race in hypersonic missiles, but the U.S. military making an announcement this week that it had successfully carried out a hypersonic missile test. What do you know about that?
So this is something that we knew back in the 60s, that this technology could be developed, and it was a technology framework that we decided to not do. I've spoken to Ambassador Hank Cooper, who ran the Strategic Defense Initiative back under President Reagan and President Bush 41, and this is a technology we were very much aware of, and it was just a choice. Now the two other countries, as you mentioned, Russia and China, have made that investment. We're now catching up, and these are good signs. The fact that they've made this a more effective system. DARPA requested $45 million more. $1 million doesn't mean anything in weapon systems. We're talking billions, and then we'll be talking. So I think it's clear that we're attempting right now to demonstrate the ability to create these things. These are very effective. There's very few defenses you can build against these things. These things are, as the title says, hypersonic. They go super fast. Something like, between 2,800, 4,000, 5,000 miles an hour can defeat pretty much any known defensive system, but they're primarily for offensive purposes. And I think while we need to be clearly armed to conduct defensive operations if we need to, this is not going to change the balance of things either way once either side get these things into the field. We've got a long way to go before these things are fielded on our side.
Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, you can catch the Thought to Action podcast at londoncenter.org. Tony, thank you.
Thanks, Rick.
You betcha. 7:45, Saturday morning update. KT McFarland next. First, Michelle Murray's in the WMAL Traffic Center.
In Virginia, 95 southbound, just north of Dumfries Road at exit 152, a disabled vehicle reported to be blocking the right lane and the right shoulder. You will also find accident activity still on southbound Route 1 near Lorton Road along the two right lanes, but the earlier accidents in Fairfax on eastbound 236 at Ollie Lane has now been cleared. All travel lanes are now open. Now, you will still find the problems in Leesburg on Business 15 southbound at the County City Line, where all southbound lanes are still closed, so follow police direction there. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Partly sunny to at times, mostly cloudy on this Saturday. Scattered showers and thunderstorms developing midday and into the afternoon. They will continue through the evening. Highs today in the mid-80s. Later on tonight, storms end. Lows back in the 60s to low 70s. More of the same on your Sunday. Partly sunny, scattered showers, afternoon storms, I think, will be likely. High temperatures tomorrow in the upper 80s. I'm 7 News meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
74 degrees in the nation's capital. It's 7:46 on the Saturday morning update. 7:50, it's the Saturday morning update on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. We are joined by KT McFarland, President Trump's Deputy National Security Advisor, a board member of the American Conservative Union, and author of the best-selling book, Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. KT, good morning.
Good morning.
The Washington Post summed up the president's trip in Saudi Arabia, saying this: the president's 3 hours at the royal palace were seen as a diplomatic win for the crown prince, who has tried to rehabilitate his image, draw investments to the kingdom for his reform plans, and bolster the kingdom's security relationship with the U.S. We've all heard about the fist bump that was heard around the world. Rolling Stone headline: Biden fist bumps ruler who ordered execution of U.S. journalist. The CEO of the Washington Post said, quote, the fist bump between President Biden and Mohammed bin Salman was worse than a handshake. You being a former Deputy National Security Advisor, let's get your perspective on the president's trip and the administration's foreign policy.
It's the stunning hypocrisy of everything President Biden does, certainly in the national security world. Look, he talks tough about China, but then he's dismantled all of the Trump-era policies that were actually tough on China. He talks tough about climate change, but his policies, if you look at them, they're forcing the world back to using coal, which is the dirtiest of all fossil fuels. He promises he's going to build back better in America, but the spending he does isn't going to spend it on infrastructure in America. It's a whole lot of pork barrel projects to his pals. I mean, he even talks about building an infrastructure for the third world to rival what China's doing. But his program that he's proposing isn't going to spend money to help American companies build the third world infrastructure. It's going to be spending American money for the Chinese to rebuild it, because the Chinese are the major supplier of capital goods to make for infrastructure development. I mean, the whole thing is just, and what the thing I guess that irks me the most is the solution is so simple. He's declared war on fossil fuels. But he has not really. He's just declared war on American fossil fuels because he's going to Saudi Arabia, hat in hand. Please pump more oil. Bring the price of gasoline down at the pumps so Democrats can get reelected. He's going to the Iranians. He's doing the same thing. He's not even really punishing the Europeans. He's not even turning back the Keystone Pipeline. He has the solution so clearly in his hand, and yet he won't do the one thing that will not only help the American economy by creating an oil industry and an energy industry in the United States. It will, number two, help the world by bringing down oil prices around the world and stopping the inflation, particularly the gasoline and energy inflation around the world, but especially in the U.S. And then finally, if he really cared about the planet, he would encourage American natural gas, which is the cleanest of all fossil fuels to be the bridge fuel between dirty coal and this utopian world he dreams of where we're all going to have everything powered by windmills. But yet he won't do it because he doesn't want to go against the far left of his own party, by the way, which is probably not even going to get reelected. So it's just stunning to me, the hypocrisy of what he's doing, the willingness, at least so far, of the media to go along with it, and the Washington elite, which I guess they all just talk to each other and they think everything is fine. They don't have any sense of what's happening in the rest of the country or really the rest of the world.
You know, it's funny, KT, we've heard so much disinformation and really lies coming out of the administration. And Alyssa Slotkin is a Democrat from Michigan, and she was on CNN, and she was saying that the American people aren't buying the spin. So where do you see the American people in terms of believing all of this?
If you're an average American somewhere in the country, particularly in a swing state, how many times do you get mad at Joe Biden a day? But you get mad at him. You get mad at him when you go through the checkout line at the grocery store, right? And you find out that your bill is probably twice what you thought it should be. You get mad at him every time you fill up at the tank because that's clearly twice what it should be. You get really mad at him every time you drive past a gas station and see, you know, the price of gasoline. This is almost like an anti-Biden yard sign, right? Because you're going past and you're thinking, oh, my God, it really is $5 a gallon. So you're thinking about how mad you are at Joe Biden every day a couple of times. And then every month you're getting mad at him a couple of times as well, because as you get your bills, whether it's for your utility bill or any other bills that you've got, it's all inflated, and you're mad at him then. And you're really mad at him when you get your paycheck, because you see that more money has been taken out, less money is coming home. Maybe somebody's telling you you're getting a 2% raise, but that doesn't really help you when the gasoline prices are 50% or 100% higher than they were a year ago. So you're really mad at Joe Biden several times a day. Now, if you're in Washington, how do you think about things? You're not mad at Joe Biden. You can't be fired from your government job. You have a lifetime tenure. You don't lose your health insurance because, of course, it's subsidized by the taxpayers. You have terrific public transportation subsidized by the taxpayers. So you're really not that upset by the higher gasoline prices. You're not really upset by the crazy mortgage situation in the United States and home prices going up and down and up and down, because in fact you're probably getting some kind of subsidized mortgage. You're not really that upset about food because you're eating at least one, probably two meals a day at your government subsidized cafeteria. So all in all, you don't have any sense that there's what the rest of the country is feeling. You know, the one sad truth when I moved from Washington to New York 40 years ago, when someone asked me, what's the big difference? And I said, well, the big difference between New York and Washington, or Washington and the rest of the country, is when there's a recession, everybody in the country feels it. Nobody in Washington ever feels a recession. Their home prices keep going up. Government spending keeps going up, so there are more and more jobs. Nobody loses their jobs. And so that's the difference. So, of course, everybody in Washington thinks Biden is terrific. Everybody in the West Wing cheers him on. The media is part of the same Washington insider crowd. The rest of the country wants to lynch them.
So the Democrats say Republicans do nothing but complain. They have no solutions. They have no answers. Is there an answer to inflation?
You bet. So I was at a dinner last week and sat next to, had the honor of sitting next to a man who's probably the owner of the major U.S. oil refinery and distribution company in the country. And so I asked him, is this so bad? Is like the end of America? How do you fix this? He said, you could fix it in 6 months. You just take the shackles off of the U.S. energy industry. American oil and natural gas industry, particularly shale oil and shale gas, we can make a profit. Our companies make a profit when oil is above $50, $60 a barrel. Actually, we make a profit at $40 a barrel, but they'd like it at $60. Otherwise, compare that to Iran, Saudi Arabia, Russia. They all need oil to be above $80, $90 a barrel because their oil pays for all of their government. Their oil companies are owned by their government. In America, our energy companies are individually and privately owned. So they just have to make a profit for themselves. They don't have to spend they don't have to support the rest of the government. So why would you not say to American oil and natural gas companies who have the ability and the resources to give oil, to give energy to the world for 100 years. Go ahead and do it. That he said within 6 months, you could turn the economy around, you could turn the price of oil and natural gas around, you could turn around the price at the pumps, but President Biden won't do it. This November election cannot come fast enough. And the tragedy of having an American president who is a lame duck within the first year of his office is, in fact, pretty stunning. The only good news about it is that the lame duck is Joe Biden and not somebody who's actually doing something good.
K.T. McFarland, the author of Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. K.T., as always, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That's going to do it for the Saturday morning update. 8 o'clock news coming up next with Maria Leaf, then it's Garden Sense.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington, a Cumulus Media station.
Making sense of the news.
News Talk 105.9. WMAL-FM.